This video is brought to you by Privacy.com. Privacy lets you buy things online using virtual cards instead of having to use the real one, protecting your identity and bank information on the internet. Right now, new customers will automatically get $5 to spend on their first purchase. Just go to privacy.com/PhilDeRue to sign up now. Go to privacy.com/PhilDeRue, PhilDaRu, and sign up now. Dan, go over, like, you know, how you got started in the industry. I saw your YouTube channel. It's awesome. You are a great strength coach. Just go over how you started, you know, from your athletic development all the way up into now coaching and being a gym owner.
Okay, so I'll try not to be too long-winded. I think the biggest thing for me was early on, I was influenced by my dad. He was big into lifting weights, and I got into wrestling. So I wrestled, I did track and field, and then I was a football player growing up.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to be like big time athlete. Yeah. So when I was getting recruited for football,
Where'd you grow up?
In southeastern Pennsylvania.
Gotcha.
So it was like I wanted to go to like Penn State or like a power school to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up being like the highest recruited school that recruited me for football was Kent State.
Okay.
And they were terrible.
All right, I'm not going to say that. You got a lot of Kent State guys, maybe. Fucking hating on us already. Views just went down. Damn.
So it basically came down to I wanted to get it. Like, I did really well in high school track as a shot putter.
Gotcha.
And then I just got obsessed with throwing and power development and force development and stuff like that. So I got into weightlifting. And as I went through college, I did pretty well in track, but I had a severe drinking problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I graduated, it ended up being that I ended up meeting up with a guy named Anatoly Bunderchuk. He's a Soviet strength coach throws coach.
Awesome.
So I ended up training with him.
Is he in Pennsylvania?
No, so he's actually in British Columbia.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I moved to British Columbia, trained with him. Mm-hmm. Training partner, got third at the Olympics in 2008. When I came back, Adam Nelson, who's an Olympic champion shot putter, hit me up about what we were doing when I was training with Dr. B. And long story short, he sort of hooked me up with Charles Poliquin.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Dr. B and Poliquin, it ended up being like, I was like, dude, I might as well start a gym and see what I have a religious studies degree and a history degree. So it's not of any value, really.
Man, you know what's so funny is what's his name? Chad Wesley Smith.
Yeah.
He's a thrower too.
Yeah.
A history degree. That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I had Matt Vincent on the podcast too.
Okay.
He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
He also was a thrower and did some Highland Games stuff. So, but it's good. You guys are highly explosive, but also very strong, which is awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And I've seen some of your videos, man. Like you're athletic too. For a guy your size, being that athletic. Also, we're going to be doing a video. So, man, I'm going to actually put this to the test today. So
I just don't want to throw up everywhere.
No, you'll be all right. I promise. Maybe a little conditioning at the end.
Oh, Jesus.
So keep going, though. What,
so basically, it was like as I came back from training with Dr. B and learning from Poliquin and just starting my gym literally in my parents' garage, it just, you know, over time, I bought a farm with my sister. We moved it into a barn, and it was just like word of mouth and just constantly grinding, working, you know, 12, 14 hours a day. And then slowly built up a pretty good following with weightlifting, Olympic weightlifting, throwing, wrestling, freestyle wrestling, and all of those like little niche sports. And then it got to the point where, you know, all the way up until this past year, I had, you know, five athletes at the Olympics in Tokyo.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I got to go there and coach for Samoa. Mm-hmm. So just, it's been crazy. Like,
what
crazy
sports were you coaching at that time?
Okay, so at the Olympics?
Yeah, at the Olympics.
Discus and shot put.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Two major sports, too.
Right.
That's
right.
Awesome. How was it like with Poliquin?
I wanted to know.
Privacy.com makes it super easy to manage your financial lives online while keeping your most important information secure. By generating virtual numbers, Privacy.com masks your bank account and information so you never have to worry about giving it out to people you do not know. Head to privacy.com/PhilDeRue and sign up for an account. New customers will automatically get $5 to spend on their first purchase. Go to privacy.com/PhilDeRue, P-H-I-L-D-E-R-U. DARU and sign up now.
So I only interacted with him like once or twice. Okay. It was mainly Clark Flynn, who was one of his like lackeys, a real good dude.
Yeah.
And then another dude named Andre Benoit.
Okay.
But he was, in my experience, I actually just shared this story recently. It was like he was very, very genuine mm-hmm. as far as what I experienced with him.
Yeah. Direct, and, a little bit more direct.
Yeah. And this is the story I have is like Clark had these draft horses, and the one horse he was like telling this class, like, yeah, he's got a bum elbow, the horse does.
Yeah.
And Charles starts telling him that he needs to give the horse like mega doses of fish oil, and he was like dead set on it. Long story short,
love that.
The horse apparently's arthritis was cured, because now about 2 years ago, 9 years after this whole thing went down, uh-huh. I saw Clark and I was like, yo, whatever happened with that draft horse with the arthritis? And he's like, dude, it disappeared after I gave him a mega dose of fish oil.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that had a remedy for everything.
Yeah, absolutely know? Everything.
And it was so like out of this world.
Yep.
And the numbers of what the mega doses and everything else.
Like the vitamin C was like off the charts.
It's crazy, man. But he's definitely smart, man. And he knew almost everything about everything. Almost, right.
Right. Yeah.
Because I remember hearing, who said it? I think it was Matt or somebody, Matt Winning.
Okay,
They did seminars together, and he was saying that, man. He would just spit just in the seminar, not have anything written down or anything prepared, and just that day he'd be like, okay, this is what I'm going to talk about, and talk about it for hours.
Yeah, this is awesome. My goal, and we're just going to roll.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think he, and I would say for me personally with the gym, mm-hmm. he probably outside, like Dr. B had the most influence on me, but Charles had the influence on – you know, absolute strength training and bodybuilding, really, and like how important they can actually play. You know, everybody sort of at the time, especially like 2012 to 2015, it was like functional stuff.
Yeah.
It got big. Yeah, and so I think like it sort of got away, at least in my mind, a lot of people got away from that style of training where it was heavier, you know, pushing heavier, doing more explosive work, doing bodybuilding, because everybody's like, oh, you're going to get big and bulky. Mm-hmm. But after I learned from Charles, it was like, no, dude, like, this stuff is actually, like, really important for structural integrity.
For sure, yeah.
So, I think it's all important, really.
How big is, like, your general preparatory phase in hypertrophy building? Like, we talk about tissue remodeling and everything else for the athletes that you work with primarily.
So if I have a shot putter, and now keep in mind they're going to be big, 300 plus pounds, that might be like 12 to 16 weeks in the fall.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, we will push some absolute strength work, but there will be like quite a bit of hypertrophy as well that we're focusing on.
Gotcha. So what's the training process look like? What are they peaking with and everything else?
So the way we set it up is that we want to see, you know, we'll use different weighted implements.
Sure.
And I think the main thing that the big difference between training, you know, when I'm training like a freestyle wrestler mm-hmm. versus a thrower is the thrower is a closed skilled, so it's just the same repetitive movement all the time.
Sure.
So we've got to make sure that they can handle the volume mm-hmm. of the specific movements. Mm-hmm. But it's basically going to look like I'll play around in the fall with intensities in the weight room, and then I'll try and pair that with different weighted implements that they're throwing, so heavier or underweight implements.
Okay,
and then we try and find specific movements that we'll see like a jump in their distance from. So mm-hmm. if they do like, let's say a pad bench press or something, maybe we see a jump in their distance because mm-hmm. they're finishing a little bit better. So it's sort of like the whole goal with peaking then is going to be setting that up throughout the year and then going, all right, when's U.S. indoors? When are the trials? When are the Olympics? Mm-hmm. And sort of working back from those three major dates of, all right, this is where we got to peak.
Gotcha.
This is where, like, if we're going to go to the Olympics or the World Championships for this year, mm-hmm. that has to be number one. Then the trials has to be number two. And then anything indoor is basically number three.
Nice. So you're able to kind of compartmentalize everything because you have that layout of time, which is awesome.
It's a set time.
For sure. Yeah.
That makes
seasons,
a lot easier.
Seasons, everything else.
Yeah.
That's cool. I used to work with some judokas, and they would compete like every month.
Yeah, that's where it's tough.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
You know? And that's where I ran into, okay, well, I'm going to have to utilize the condensed style of what I do. For that, sometimes, because of the fact they're only training that one particular modality,
right.
I was able to kind of do a 3 to 4 day split at times.
Okay.
But that was way away from like their I guess, constant competing, because there was a like a strip of time where like for 5 or 6 months every month they were gone.
So they would travel for maybe up to like 10 days?
Yeah, pretty much, because it was all overseas. Yeah.
So how much time then would you spend in that case on hypertrophic gains, or is it mainly just...
It was
just
so hard to do, you know? I think what we did was we kind of focused the accessories just on the things that they were lacking, just from a structural integrity standpoint.
Yeah.
Building the armor up, so a lot of posterior chain stuff, you know, and then grip work, things like that, but not true hypertrophy, you know. Right. It was more so just making sure they maintain that muscle, and then we were working on the adaptations that were going to be conducive to the match or the fight.
Right, yeah, you know?
And they're funny when they do shadow boxing too, by the way. It's a little different. It looks like they're on drugs. You ever see that? You ever see them shadow box?
Is it almost like a, is it Taekwondo or in the Olympics where they're doing those weird...
No, maybe? it almost looks like they're at Woodstock. Yeah. And just tripping on acid, man. Like, for real, this is crazy. So now they make that transition, like wrestling. How are you working with the wrestlers?
So the thing with wrestling is especially, so if we're talking in this case, like freestyle wrestling. Mm-hmm. So I've got Nick Wazowski. He's been on the world team four times. Nice. Someone like him, it's going to be set up more so where I essentially set up like benchmark lifts for him. It's like, all right, you're a heavyweight, so we have to be this strong with absolute, like a squat or a front squat or a single leg squat. And then we need to be making sure that even something like a bench press or pull-ups, how many pull-ups can you do? How many bench presses at a certain weight? What is your max also? So sort of creating these ratios. And then essentially it's like, he's similar to what you were describing with the judo players, is it's like, we might have, you know, a shorter time frame. So they just had the world championships in the fall. Mm-hmm. But now, what basically after that, it's, all right, we can prep from middle of October until like February, but he's going to be leaving to go to Russia twice.
Yeah.
You know, and when he's there, he might only train once or twice in the weight room.
Yeah, they're doing a lot.
Yeah, and then he comes back, and then he's got, you know, basically 2 months before the next world team trials.
Yeah.
And so it's mainly going to be similar to what you had said, where it's like, we'll try for about 2 months to really push increasing, you know, rate of coordination, increasing his absolute strength. He's already pretty big, so like we're not too focused on hypertrophy because he is in a weight, like he can't weigh above a weight class.
True. Yeah. That's one thing that I have to always look at, you know. I love it when I get a guy or a girl that actually is going up in weight.
Yeah, it makes it easier. Yeah.
Hopefully we can do that with Dustin at some point. but yeah, that's cool. So as far as like, because I know that, so you were a thrower. Did you wrestle?
Yeah,
you
wrestled, I wrestled in high school, yeah.
How was that, though, different, like as far as the training goes, you know?
Training, I mean, it's just high school level, it's easy.
Yeah.
You know, I think the difference that I've seen
in Pennsylvania.
Well, yeah, not in PA. PA is different. Tough, yeah. I think the biggest difference that I will see, especially with wrestlers, is that you can't take away from the technical work that they're going to be doing on the mat. So the whole goal, and I think strength coaches, this is where I think you do a really good job, I mean, just from the outside looking in, is that you will discuss, you know, like, look, I can't take away from what Dustin's doing in the ring or what he's doing with his fight game. Mm-hmm. You're just a supplement to that happening.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the biggest thing with wrestlers is that, yes, it's a combat sport, and there is a lot of like, mat strength that they need.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I'm just supplementing that tech. Mm-hmm. It's a technical sport. It's extremely technical.
For sure.
So we can't have him going into his mat work where he can barely walk because he's so sore. You know, so it's like it's finding that happy medium between making strength gains and being able to do the technique work.
For sure. I think, like, you know, with the track and field stuff and strength sports in general, it's so quantifiable. Like, you know, okay, this is working.
Yeah. And if this, then that.
Exactly. Yeah. So with wrestling, with combat sports, it's like, all right, well, we can assume to a degree, we can base these metrics off of whatever numbers that we could take in off the baseline. And, oh, they got stronger here, but is that a direct correlation? And that's where, like, finding that balance or that dynamic transfer is going to work for whatever you're trying to do inside the weight room. When we can get to the point where we can directly test, like, benefits from what we're doing in the weight room that will directly correlate over to the sport, that's when we broke the ground of
everything,
you know?
Yeah.
And we're about there. I think places like the UFCPI, I'm actually doing some stuff soon with force plates and velocity profiling and stuff like that. But in a directed movement pattern
that is
going to correlate over to the fight game. But the problem with MMA, though, is it's so multifaceted.
Yeah,
right?
It's crazy.
So there's not, like, one thing that's actually going to – you know, maybe you could say – you could make an argument for, like, takedowns, and takedowns can ultimately win a fight in all actuality, but so can knockouts.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right,
so,
right.
Like, there's got to be several different markers.
Right.
You know, with wrestling, it's a little different. I do believe that wrestling beats you up, and I trained and I fought professionally – I trained over 10 years, and I'm telling you now, like, even sparring, and I've been through some hard sparring sessions, wrestling always beat me up more than sparring.
Right.
You know, so because you're grinding constantly.
So that brings up a question for me mm-hmm. to you is that have you seen, you know, with those level of fighters that you've worked with, mm-hmm. is there always, like, some consistent physical qualities that you'd like – the best guys that you've ever worked with, yeah. they all have something similar. Like wrestlers almost always internally rotate because they're always in that weird stance.
Yeah, yeah.
Fighters aren't in that similar stance, but is there anything...
Like compensation pattern?
Like a quirky aspect behind them outside of the fact that they're killers.
I used to say like, yeah, you know, it could be with the kyphotic posture that is something, but like, you know, you get a lot of guys that are coming straight from an MMA background.
Yeah, so
they don't have a background in wrestling or a background in judo or jiu-jitsu or anything.
It's everything.
Like that. It's everything. So you got this new hybrid, flood of new guys coming in. Like a guy like Ian Garry, who's never did anything but MMA. And he started in college.
Right.
You know, and now he's highest level that he can be at right now, you know, in the UFC. With Dustin, it's a little different, you know. You would think that he would be more kyphotic in nature because, you know, he's a striker, but he's also he's black belt in jiu-jitsu.
Right.
So you have
that
too. But he's not, you know, he's extended in a lot of ways, you know. He's got a different posture than most. But what I will say as far as like attributes is the mindset. You know, the elite guys, and it goes for any sport really, is that their belief in themselves and then also having the ability to not have the anxiety take over their entire brain function and their physicality as they get into the cage, especially in the UFC, because that's where you see guys crumble. They may be really good in the gym and they get into the fight, cage door closes, all these fans are, you know, screaming and yelling at their names. And then it just there's a different person in there.
Yeah, they're outside their body then. Instead of
So it's really the mindset.
How do you prepare for that in the gym then?
So a lot of it comes from just being prepared mentally and physically, and that'll give them the confidence necessary. That's why we like to have those numbers, because even as a weight room as a performance coach, you know, the skills coaches are different. You definitely want to be solid when you know you're sparring or you're drilling and things like that, and you should feel confident in your approach. You should be, you know, getting the best of a lot of guys inside of sparring to a degree. Like, you also want to get, you know, beat up some days, you know,
because
you need to be pushed
to feel it.
But those confidence boosters from those little wins inside the weight room that is in a controlled environment allows them to feel like, oh man, I'm strong, I'm powerful, I'm conditioned, you know.
Then they're more precise mentally.
Yeah, exactly. So if not anything, those general markers allow us to give them that data to showcase, okay, look, this is directly telling you that your conditioning is better, which can correlate over to the fight because we know you're efficient in your skills.
Right.
So as long as your skills are on point, and you're not going to have high anxiety going in there because you know exactly what's going to happen because you've been preparing for that particular individual for 8 to 12 weeks long. And then you go in and you are confident in your conditioning so you can push the pace a little bit more. Like, a lot of guys aren't confident in their conditioning.
Yeah,
and they're just gunshot.
Halfway through their second round, they might start really, like, almost having panic attacks.
It's
like, oh my gosh, what if I get tired?
Yeah, a lot of guys
get gassed out. And that actually makes them more tired.
It gets them gassed out. So, like, they could be in good condition, you know, inside the sparring, like, the sparring and everything else. But when they get in there, their anxiety picks up because that guy's actually trying to kill them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Or that girl, whoever.
Right.
And so that's what plagues a lot of fighters a lot of ways, especially in the high levels.
So do you sit there and say, like, all right, if I have a fighter where Let's you know, some hypothetical dude. I come into your gym and I want to be a UFC fighter. This won't happen because I'm afraid of
getting hit. I don't know, man. This might be the next step for you.
So do you sit there and say, okay, we've got some, let's say, like power output that you use to measure. You've got absolute strength. You have some means of measurement. You have endurance, some means, like a test that you utilize.
Yeah.
And then you basically run through that list. And maybe you have some plyometric test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you take these guys, put them through that evaluation, and then you can sit there and say, all right, this is where the dude sucks. This is where the dude's really good.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you can, and I've done it for so long, I can already see it.
As soon as they start training?
Yeah, yeah. And it also, like, I'll watch some film or I'll know the guy. Like, there's a couple of guys that are really, really up there, top 10 in the UFC. And I could see, I already know how they fight, so I already can have, like, a pre-notion of, like, okay, what they're good at, what they're not good at.
Where they're lacking, yeah.
Exactly. And then those weak points, we just try to hit those every time. And especially if I have an off-camp with them, that's where I'm going to be working their limitations.
Okay, that makes sense. So my other question, because you do such a good job with...
Oh, thanks, man.
Kettlebells.
Oh, man.
The endurance stuff, the landmine, the powerlifting background, yeah. Like... As somebody who's trying to steal as much information from you as possible.
I'm trying to steal your information, man. That's why I got you here.
But if I watch and I sit there and I go, all right, does Phil take, the assault bike, is that just for endurance work? Is kettlebell for, rotational work and endurance work?
Yeah,
is plyometric for speed and reaction? Is trap bar deadlift or whatever, is that for the absolute strength? Is that... how you compartmentalize it, or is it also everything?
I use everything, man, to my advantage.
Yeah.
Especially coming up when I didn't have anything. When I first started training guys, I was training my teammates, and I barely had, I had a gym that was like 800 square feet, but 500 square feet of working space.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of tires, sledgehammer, battle ropes. I think the dumbbells were like to 25 pounds or something like that. I got them in a garage sale. So like it was really nothing. So I had to kind of make do with what I had. And there was a hill. Not a hill. You guys have hills. We don't have hills. But there was like a bridge.
Even on-ramp.
Yeah, it was an on-ramp. That's it. We ran that shit up and down. So I started flip the tires up the on-ramp, and sled dragging and things like that. But I had a tire, things that... I made it work. Now that I have the equipment, like the Prowler to me, I think is multifaceted.
Yeah,
I can do conditioning, I can do power work, I can do contrast work with it, and I can do max strength work with it, or at least strength endurance work with it in different time frames. And it's in those, the kinematics, the kinesthetics, the ability to move with that motion allows them to, like, again, with the takedowns, that's perfect, right? You got the 45-degree angle, you're driving through.
Right.
And I'm teaching them how to accelerate through that motion, as opposed to just hitting and stopping, right? So a lot of ballistic-style motion, a lot of plyometrics we love to do because that does have correlation to the sport.
Right.
No matter what, it's the speed of that sport. The conditioning, however, is dependent upon their ability to utilize and deliver oxygen. So if their limitations are delivery, they have a delivery limitation as far as like cardiac output,
right?
Then we got to work on, we can still do the assault bike, but it's going to be obviously less intense.
Slower state. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And honestly, we won't throw that into the weight room work, but that could be something that they do for homework.
It's like active recovery, essentially.
It almost is. And at the same time, they're still getting a training benefit from it.
Right.
And also, it can be a good change of pace from the day-to-day grind of either, grappling, sparring, things like that.
So do you, like, that I'm just thinking now, too, because you brought up earlier about the, and going into a fight has to be absolutely overwhelming if you're not prepared. And one of the things that I was thinking about, because you when you were describing it, they shut the cage.
Yeah.
It's a different feeling than what you've even probably prepared for. And you might even not be fully prepared until you experience a couple times. I guess my question was going to be, is there stuff that you do in the gym, and is it,
okay,
do they, mm-hmm, do you get them to meditate more? Mm-hmm. Do you get them to breathe properly? Or do you, what supplements are they taking also to get that, to trigger some mental stimulation? I know it's like a multifaceted question, but
we got to be careful with the supplements because USADA. because they'll just find anything at this point. You know, even creatine is crazy, so yeah. We got to be careful. But third party tested, obviously. But creatine is something that we love to use, obviously, for the benefits of what creatine does with energy production and strength gains and everything else, but also for the brain health benefits too as well. So my guys will take a little bit of creatine. So Dustin usually does like 2.5 grams pre and post sparring.
Okay.
Right. So if he does get any type of brain trauma or brain injury or anything like that, he should help. You know? As far as like sodium is big, you know, sodium is key for us, especially because of weight cutting and everything else.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that we have that sustainable amount, one for the electrolyte balance, and so for when they get close to the weight cut, when they take it out, they'll be able to lose that water a lot more efficiently.
Quickly, yeah.
Sauna sessions are really big for us too as well, you know, because it gets them heat adapted. Yep. So now they have the ability to sweat more. If they sweat more, then the weight cut will be easier.
Right.
And so they can sustain that. And also the other benefits from, like, you know, the hormonal benefits of the sauna sessions and things like that. We'll do ice baths, but we only really do ice baths for the mental side of it, honestly.
Okay.
And I'll do that inside of a fight camp because obviously it has negative effects to hypertrophy. If we're working off camp, we're trying to build muscle, we're trying to build strength. We don't want to do that too much. But 1 to 2 days a week, you know, just for mental toughness, honestly.
Right.
And there's some other benefits from a neurological standpoint too as well. But
would they use caffeine at all before a fight?
No. Okay. That's crazy.
That's like, why I wasn't sure.
It's funny, man.
Like, you get too wired.
Yeah. It's so. I'll give you a story. So Hector Lombard, I just.
So he's a bare knuckle guy, right?
Actually,
he used to.
No, he's like an MMA legend. Okay, honestly, he's an MMA legend. When I was fighting, I looked up to him.
Okay.
He's like the Mike Tyson of MMA.
All right.
And so Hector was on the show, but he's a good friend of mine. I've known him for 10 years. I trained with him. I was coaching with him. And all of a sudden, like right before the fight, you know, there was he needed some sugar. He needed something, right? Because he was just like fatigued. Like, he wanted to get out there and just, you know, do his thing. But somebody went to give him a Red Bull. And I was like, oh, no. That's the worst thing you could do, especially for that guy.
He's already wired. Yeah,
already wired. So you really don't want that. And your heart rate's already going before you even step out into the cage.
Right.
You know, as soon as they call your name, your heart rate spiked. You know what I mean? So it's time to go. The goal for that, though, is to have that aggression be honed in, right? You have that controlled aggression. And when you can do that, you can utilize that aggression to the fullest, but allows you to stay focused on the task at hand.
Right.
So, yeah, really don't do a lot of caffeine. Some guys do, like, I mean, what we do, like beta alanine and stuff like that. But that's in training, not during a fight. No, you want to kind of keep it away as much as possible. Creatine, some amino acids, essential amino acids are fine, but no stimulants whatsoever.
Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of water, obviously.
Yeah. That's where it's different from throwing, because it's like throwers will just go in and have a gram of caffeine.
That makes sense, though. Like when I was powerlifting, you know,
it's similar. It's very similar. Yeah, it's exactly. Similar.
It's ramp up, calm down. Ramp up, calm down.
I think that's the interesting part behind the fight game is that, I mean, one, you're going to have multiple coaches, but two, it's like you could have somebody who's endurance based, power based, strength based, all of the above.
Yeah.
Do they have the brain to be one of the best in the world, or do they lose their mind when they get into the cage and they forget their tactics? And it's like, that's where it's like, as a strength coach, it's harder than, I think it's harder than even like football preparation by far, because there's so many different little things that you have to calculate to figure out what's going to work.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see you do like some sort of combat sport. Maybe jiu-jitsu. I think jiu-jitsu would be perfect because you wrestled.
Oh, me actually doing it?
Yeah,
oh, gee,
exactly.
My brother's a black belt.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
He wrestled at Penn State for a little.
Did he really? Yeah. Man, I'll tell you right now, the wrestlers always have that edge. They go in there.
Yeah,
you know, and like, I know a couple guys that wrestled in like at Duke and I think North Carolina, and they came down to train with us.
Okay.
At American Top Team and automatically they got their blue belt. Like, they didn't pass the white belt, go right to the blue belt. You know? And even then they were kind of sandbagging at that point.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's definitely the base for mixed martial arts. But if any combat sport in general, I think it's really good to start with that, especially at a young age. You know, I obviously have a son, so I want to get.
I was just gonna say, is he gonna start wrestling?
Yeah, man, we're just trying to find a good club. You know, I'm up there in like Palm City Stewart area, okay. which is like there's one good club out there, but he's done a lot. He's done jiu-jitsu, he's done Muay Thai, he's been around the gym all his life, he's been around fighters all his life, obviously. I used to take him with me, put him in a stroller, and then we would be training for hours. He'd just sit there and watch me. So he's grown up with it. But
I can relate to that.
I know.
That's my first son is the exact same thing. It's like seeing them come up, and it's like mm-hmm. you don't mean to brainwash him, but it's like, hey, do you want to go lift?
Yeah,
I'm gonna be there for 2 hours. Yeah. All right, I'll come lift.
Yep, exactly.
It's
exactly.
like, and then he's around other kids, and you're like, why is he mm-hmm. so much bigger?
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 37.
37. Yeah. So. How is it now being a coach, business owner? You have a good YouTube channel now. It's growing.
Thank you.
So make sure you check out a YouTube channel. With all that, like being a father, I know how it is, but explain a little bit.
I talk with my wife about this a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think, one, you've got to have a supportive spouse, sure. right? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the biggest thing is creating a vision of where you want to be.
Yeah.
And it's like, I want to be out here, and this is where I am, and this is all that has to include what you want to accomplish with your children, what you want your, who do you want your kids to become, yeah. What do you want your business to become, mm-hmm. what do you want to become, mm-hmm. and it's like laying out that blueprint mentally, but also writing it down and communicating that with your spouse or with your business owners or partners, whatever, mm-hmm. and I think that that's like the hardest part, but once you do it and you just recheck that consistently. Mm-hmm. I think the hardest thing though that I have struggled with in the past is doing this. Mm-hmm. Is this about me making money mm-hmm. and getting popular, or is it about me? Do I want to be the best strength coach in the world? Do I want to be the best throws coach in the world?
Yeah.
And it took a while to realize, like, if I'm the best throws coach in the world, or if I'm the best weightlifting coach in the world, mm-hmm. the money will be there at some point.
Sure.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Right.
Your value is high.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think that's where. You know, I think that's the biggest thing, because then that's what my value is, right? And it's like some people might have different values, but, you know, taking from you, like you put off, like you're putting out that information. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're so good as a coach as well. That's why you have the best fighters in the mm-hmm. world. And to me, it's like, I think once you can establish that vision, mm-hmm. it's like balancing that, and the happier you are, I don't want to get hokey, but like mm-hmm. the happier you are as a person, the mm-hmm. better you're going to be with true. Your kids.
Yeah,
and true. Your kids are going to take that as like, oh, yeah. dad's not an asshole. He's a yeah. he's a happy guy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
but
yeah.
he still pushes people, you know, and I think that's what we've got to teach our kids. It's like, mm-hmm. you got to work, you got to be happy, and you have to learn how to be uncomfortable.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. I think because like for me, it's the ability to turn it on and turn it off.
Yeah.
You know? Especially yep. going home, I got to be dad, you know, and there's several hats that you have to wear.
Yeah. That can get tough, especially mm-hmm. if you've got employees or if you're pissed at a fighter. Yep. Like, dude, yeah. it's like,
trust me,
and then you come home and you're, you know, for yeah. me, it's like I've got a 10, a 6-year-old and yep. 2 3-year-olds and I'm yeah. like, I can't yell at them.
No.
I mean, I can, but not yeah. in this case.
No problem. They didn't do much. You know,
yeah.
just kind of sit there. It's hard. It, for me, it's hard to get mad at my son, man. He's just, because he is a good kid. So I'm blessed for that.
But, yeah.
You know, at some points, I'm like, oh, why'd you do that? You
know
what
yeah.
I mean? I try to chill out. But yeah, I can see some of the coaching aspects of my life going hand in hand with father.
Yeah, I think for sure.
You know? Yeah, leading people is definitely a key contributor to having a good relationship with your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's huge. I think it's like, I think too, it's like as you become a better coach, I believe you end up being a better coach, you become a better business person, you become a better spouse, a better parent.
Yeah.
Because now you're interacting with people and you're reading the room a little. You're more self-aware of
yeah.
who you are, and that's
true.
Honestly, I think the most important part is like once you realize what you want, mm-hmm. and you know what you want and what you want to get is out there, and you have to stay true to yourself. Then you're going to put that off to your kids.
Sure.
You know, so,
yeah. So you have your own gym now, right?
Yep.
How did that start? And like, you have any advice for these young kids coming up? Trying to start their own gym.
Ooh.
Sometimes, I get this a lot, man.
Sometimes I'll be like, don't do it.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you.
I think the best thing is, and I learned this from John Meadows. Mm-hmm. He did a phone call with me where right as COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what I was going to do because I was so hung up on just training. Just training, train, strength train. That's all I wanted to do. And I kept thinking, like, everything would pay out. Like, I worked for 10 to 12 years at this point with my gym.
Yeah.
I had Olympians, I had world championship caliber athletes, but I still wasn't making a ton of money.
Yeah.
And when I talked with John, he's like, dude, go on YouTube. And,
yeah.
And he's like, reverse engineer what I've done. Reverse engineer what the best people in the field that you're in have done. Reverse engineer everything. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're going to realize that as you do that, you know, it sets up collaborations like this where it's like, yo, we're not here. Like, you want to make a lot of money. I want to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But if I reverse engineer what you've done, and maybe you do that if you want to with what I've done to a point, then we learn and we can talk and we can figure out progressively how to actually grow. And I think that's the biggest thing with strength coaches and gym owners. Mm-hmm. We always want to talk trash on everybody. And I think that being in weightlifting, weightlifters will always look at powerlifters and be like, oh, powerlifters are stupid.
Yeah.
And powerlifters look at weightlifters like, oh, they're pussies. And it's like,
you got the CrossFit going.
Over there. And it's like, in all reality, it's just like, we can just reverse engineer what all of us are doing.
Yeah.
And
make it work.
Yeah, make it work. And I think that's the whole, that would be my advice, is just find out what you want to be and then find somebody similar and work backwards, and it's going to take time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when you started, was it like just automatic? Did you get, a lot of people joining the gym, or was it like, all right, I got a couple good athletes here and they told their friends?
It was more like that, yeah. It was the biggest thing for us in Pennsylvania was once we had like our first guy within the first year qualify for states in wrestling. It was like, oh man, like in PA, it's like a religion to wrestle. So as soon as that happened, it was like I went from one wrestler to like 12, and then within 2 years after that, we had a state champ.
Nice.
And it was like, oh, Pete Rinda went there. Let's go. So it was sort of like. It did blow up after that, like, year or two, but it was the same origin story that you just described, where you're in a, I was in my parents' garage in 400 square feet, and we had to figure it out, And I think that those moments and those memories, those experiences, is what will mold. If you have that, will mold you moving forward.
100%. Yeah.
Because if you don't go through with that, like you figure out real quick what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to go through those hard times.
Yeah.
For sure. So like. How was it setting up? Did you have like any business sense at all, or was it like
no, that's the biggest.
I failed on this one too.
yeah, that's where to give Phil a little plug. That's where you should be buying his business mentorship, because I think that was the dumbest thing that I did.
Yeah.
Was like, it took me like 5 or 6 years, and we had a guy who came in who he runs like this huge hair salon. Like chain in our area.
Okay.
And his son was a QB, and he came in when he was in like sixth grade. And he came in, and then actually a pharmacist guy comes in, and they just started talking to me about business.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm not a business owner. I just want to be a strength coach.
Yeah.
So about 6 months later, I'm like, dude, I should just listen to what they're saying.
Yeah.
And having them as mentors, it even still, I think it took me until like really like two and a half years ago to figure out what's the difference between running different types of companies, and then also just figuring out like how can you get a gym to be successful.
Yeah.
And it's not just creating athletes, it's bigger than that. And you can also look at it like you're impacting like hundreds of thousands of people. Mm-hmm. When you put stuff out on YouTube or on Instagram. And I think that when you think about it that way, you've got to, you can grow quite a bit. But as far as the business sense is concerned, I read a couple books, but it was like the practicality was not there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think experience does help you out a lot. You got to go through some trial and error. I made some mistakes along the way. I still make some mistakes.
What was your biggest business failure?
Failures. I mean, I've had a couple, Like, the gym businesses obviously are very hard to come by, I opened up my first gym in Port St. Lucie, which is like a small town up north in Florida. But the good thing was that there was no other gyms around. And I was the only real strength gym.
Okay.
There was a lot of like LA Fitness and Anytime Fitness and things like that. But the one gym that I used to work out at was a strong man and powerlifting gym owned by Tony Montgomery.
Okay.
So Tony was actually on the podcast and we started talking about this, and I was like, you know, you basically started my entire career in that sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what happened was I was training there and I was like, man, I need a job. Like I need to get some money. And so like I had my degree and I had a couple certifications, but I was like, I was fighting. I was training.
Right.
And so he was like, you want to just train a couple of these guys, you know, we'll give you the key and you can pay rent, whatever. And that's how it started.
Okay.
And so fast forward, you know, I ended up buying all of his equipment. He left, went to Colorado, and I took over all the equipment that he had. And he had like at least $30,000 worth of equipment that I got for like payments. That
right,
I
right. Make, you know? Which is huge.
Awesome. Right. And they were all like top of the line equipment. I still have some of the stuff in here.
I think what you just said too is also huge for people who are like business, getting into the business world, is they think they've got to buy all this new stuff. And it's like,
yeah, that's,
dude, you don't have to do that.
Yeah. I think because people, depends on what demographic you're going after.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, my demographic was, it was strength training, it was boot camps, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. So I didn't really have to go with the glitz and the glamour and the, you know, carpet and chrome type style gym, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want that.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, like, now we get to a point where you're training high level guys and girls and celebrities and stuff like that, and they may want a little bit more of that, but there's still ways that you can do it to still make it authentic to yourself.
Right,
you
know what I mean? Right, yeah.
And so the only thing that I would say is I grew super fast, so quick, you know, and I was like, all right, and it was almost too fast,
right?
You know, and so I went from 800 square feet within like 6 months, we moved to 1900 square feet, and then from 1900 square feet within the next year was 11,000 square feet. So it was a big jump.
Within a year. Holy
shit. So I'm 23, 24 years old.
At the time, I had
about 300 members, you know.
Holy.
I had
seven. How did you manage any of that?
Man, it was tough. It was tough because, like I said, at that time, like I had just opened up like a bank account, a business bank account. like I was putting money in shoeboxes at that point.
Holy cow.
And so, you know, I started to understand.
You got envelopes in like your bureau when you're pulling with all the cash.
It was bad, man. It was bad. I was like, how am I going to do this? So, you know, luckily though, I knew the realtor there. I knew the owner of the building. So it was all good. But grew astronomically. And then sustaining that with marketing and everything else. And this is like Instagram wasn't there at that point like that. You know, I was using Facebook and I started using YouTube.
Okay.
And so when I started using YouTube, I started putting that out. It started to grow. Facebook, all organic follows, like all organic, you know, as far as like people so
what
referring
year would this
out.
Have been? 2010?
2011.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
2011, 2012. So I was getting a ton of referrals. I met my wife at the gym.
Okay.
It was like, she came to the gym and that was it. I was like, all right,
let's go lift.
So then, you know, she grew up around the area and then all those other people grew up around the area. So then they started bringing their family members, their you know, coworkers, everything. And it was by myself at that point.
How were you managing that they were paying you?
As far as?
Like, did you have like a
oh, yeah, yeah. I started to have a system at that point. Yeah, okay. And we had QuickBooks and everything else at that point. But at the same time, I was still knee-deep in coaching and fighting. I was still a professional fighter. So a lot of stuff started getting thrown at me, and I lost a couple of like my first fights because of the fact I wasn't focused.
Right.
I was trying to build a business now at this point, and I was missing training. And I was in camp, and I was missing training. I never missed training, ever. Like it would be three times.
But you're working on the business now.
I'm working on the business. I'm coaching guys and girls. I'm doing boot camps at like midnight to 5 a.m. I did a midnight class and I would come back and do a 5 a.m. class.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then I would, you know, try
to train. Who's coming in at midnight?
So I had a bunch of guys that worked in like a steel yard.
Okay.
And they would come in. And
right after.
So like,
yeah.
They were right after. So they were like, oh, it would be better if we could just come right after and we sleep and we go back.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
But I had a good group, man. I had like 30 guys.
I think that's another lesson that you just brought up is when you first start the business, you're so willing to do anything to make money. And that's good. But there's a very fine line between doing anything and then eventually being like, no.
It wasn't really the money because like I wasn't getting rich off this thing. Yeah. You know, it was more so like, I need to build. I need to build, and I want to help as many people as possible because I know this is going to be reciprocated.
Right.
And so, like, that was more the main thing. Like, it was like FOMO. Like, you know,
I didn't want it. And my athletes always say that to me. Yeah. Dang, you're just having FOMO because you're not here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, shut up. Exactly, man. So those are the main things, and it's just like kind of I need to slow down and scale appropriately.
Right.
And now we've gotten to that point. Like, obviously, I sold that gym. And then I got the job at American Top Team, spent my time there. And then I was like, okay, I'm done. I need to open up my own spot again. And that was around, that was 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
Okay. So basically, like, the time at ATT bridged to where we're at right now.
Yeah.
From that craziness in the beginning.
I opened up a small, small studio gym up where I'm at to train, like, you know, high-end clients. This was, like, in a mini mall, I still would train there. So I would have my squat rack, I'd have my reverse hyper, everything in there.
Okay.
And so I'd get ready for powerlifting meets, you know, on the weekdays, and then I would go to my boy's gym who was a powerlifter, and we would train there on Saturdays. But I would train like dentists, lawyers, things like that in the AC'd out, like
boutique
style gym.
Right.
But we'd also start doing a lot more videos there.
Okay.
So now I had basically a studio that I could do all my content, start the podcast. I did a podcast before this podcast.
Okay.
And it just helped out, you know, and then that's when, okay, I was like, all right, well, it's no need for me to have a boutique gym up there. Let me just bring everything down here now.
Right.
And that's what happened.
So would you look at the gym now, you know, to get into the business a little more, would be, do you see it as a fight gym, like, or a sports performance center?
Yeah.
Or your YouTube studio, or both?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. And like, you know, there's always moves to be made, and for me, I'm always trying to evolve. And people go crazy sometimes because I'm like, all right, so the next thing now is this. And I'm trying not to do the thing where I did before, where I'm trying to grow too fast.
Yeah.
But it's not a fact of doing it action-based. It's more about just the thought process of it, the vision area, the vision of it. And so that's what we're looking to do now next is to get, you know, a bigger facility, looking around 30,000 square feet to do recovery, to do testing.
To do, like, everything you could absolutely think of.
Consults, you know, things like that. And then obviously all of our content and the podcast will be there too as well.
Right.
So now we have everything in-house, but we're going to separate it a little bit, give ourselves more room to do what we need to do separately.
Right.
You know?
That's crazy. It's like seeing. I mean, it's essentially doing what the UFC Center is doing. I guess the one in Vegas.
And that's where like getting people like Evan Pike on, getting people like Brian Mann, you know, Dr. Andy Galpin, bringing these guys in and being like, look what I got.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and then they might even be interested in it.
Well, the good thing is like, and you'll get this too. Yeah, you know, being in the industry and networking, this allows you to be around all these individuals that you guys can bounce ideas off each other, and like something that he may know, you don't know, and then that reciprocates. You may know something that he doesn't know, and then now you guys are growing together.
Yeah,
and that's always good. You know?
I think that's the biggest thing, just from YouTube in general. That Meadows had said to me early on. He was like, dude, you stop looking at people as like competitors, and you start to see them, you know, unless they treat you poorly.
Yeah.
But you start to see them more so as, how are they going to contribute to your growth, and how can you contribute to their growth?
Yeah, exactly. And I found you through should athletes train Westside?
Oh
I found that video. I'm like, let me check this guy. Right? Because everybody hates on Louis is my guy, man.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, oh, that's my video. And I go,
I talked about you in the video.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, that's my video. Okay. I was like, oh, no, that's a lot of good points. And that's when I commented.
Yeah.
You know, and then you did the one with Alex. I saw the one with Alex with the landmine.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, he's really doing it right, you know, because you're not negative.
Yeah, yeah. I purposely my old self, this is before I went to therapy, would have been like, no, this is stupid. Why would you do this? And it's like, no, it's not stupid. These people are getting better. Like, these, and like even with Alex, a lot of people are like, oh, just landmine work? It's like, he's probably not doing only landmine work, but it's also
I'll say that now he's not just doing only landmine
work. It's also like, dude, he's trying to make money and have a business. Like, let him do his thing. And he's providing good knowledge for people.
Yeah, I think he's from your area.
Oh, he is. I didn't know that.
I think he's from at least somewhere around there. He's
okay,
but but he wrestled, played football. Yeah, I mean, the good thing about like that type of stuff, like, yeah, that's a niche, you
right,
know? And so
right.
You found your niche. You found yep. your niche in that particular exactly. aspect of training. He's running with that, you yeah. know. And for me, that's like saying, oh, he only works with fighters. You know, he don't know
yeah, shit about
us. It's like, all right, well, maybe you should look a little bit deeper.
Right.
You know, just because I made my niche in that doesn't mean I'm not competent in all these other things.
Exactly. Same
thing with you. Like,
yeah.
Exactly. You'd be competent. Thing. Somebody came in there and like a swimmer came into right. your gym, right?
Yep.
You had to evolve and take what you've known and help that individual out no matter what.
Yeah.
You know? And again, like you can refer out if you need to, if you feel totally uncomfortable, but you should be able to take on that challenge
and solve the problem.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And that's what a coach does. They yeah. solve the problem.
Exactly.
You know?
Yep.
So why did you start the YouTube channel?
Well, it was mainly to survive COVID.
Yeah.
It was literally that. I mean, we had YouTube when I was in my parents' garage in like 2009, I think was when I first uploaded. And where I was so stupid is that I uploaded like baseball videos, football videos, and looking at them now, they have like a million views or whatever. I don't know if they have that many, but they have they were huge videos.
Yes, yeah.
And I just didn't keep doing it. I just stopped because I got so big training people that I was like, oh, I don't know, I can't keep up with this.
Damn.
And so then, you know, we were just using YouTube to house like our movement library for how we were training sure. our athletes on site.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I reached out to Meadows because I had sort of just followed his career. And he was like, yo, I'll get on a phone call and talk to you about this. Really? I'll help you out. Yeah.
And John was always a good guy.
Dude, real good guy. Yeah. And basically he was just like, dude, you've got to give me 2 straight years. You can't stop for 2 years. You have to do it. And, you know, we started in April of 2020. And by December of 2020, we had 10,000 subscribers, and I was like, all right, this is okay. And that, yeah. you know, now we're at 100 a year later now, a yeah, year and a half right. is at 143,000. So it's like,
it's crazy.
Yeah. It's like him telling me like, you can't stop, you got to just keep mm-hmm. doing it and see where it's at.
Yeah.
And then you start to learn about, you know, your analytics and where the traffic flow is coming to your site sure. and all the other different things. And,
yeah.
I own a supplement company as well where oh, it's wow. like
I don't know that.
Yeah, I own a company called Earth Fed Muscle, but it's gotcha. Like it's that company is so different from the gym. Mm-hmm. And that company was okay. This company was, and this is where my heart, like this is the yeah. only shit I actually care about.
yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's like I'm like, all right, I've got to make this more sustainable so my wife doesn't kill me. Basically, Meadows saved us.
Nice, man. Yeah, yeah. Rest in peace, John Meadows.
Yeah,
man,
absolutely.
That was awesome. We was actually supposed to do some stuff too. I was supposed to do a podcast with him and go out to Ohio.
Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, it's crazy. A lot of people gone, man.
Yeah, you know, especially but, recently.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right. Well, listen. Let's go ahead because I want to get you on the floor.
I'm a little nervous about this.
No, we're gonna do this. And so first, before we do that, make sure they can find you and
yeah.
all your social media.
You can head over to Garage Strength on YouTube. I was gonna give you the YouTube plug, but head over to Garage Strength on YouTube,
yep.
and then at Garage Strength on Instagram, and then my personal Instagram handle is GhostfaceDMilla on Instagram. So check all those out and GarageStrength.com.
Nice. And you gonna do a podcast soon or what?
Yeah, and well, I'll have you on. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly.
All right. See you guys. Nice. Oh shit. See you guys next time. Peace.